Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of From the Roots Up. This week on the show, we're going to take on a topic I've been wanting to take on from the beginning, really. And that topic is immigration. The thing is, you know, it's such a broad topic and there's just so many aspects of it. And also, it's been really loaded up with big feelings over the last couple of decades. And, you know, I really wanted to make sure that I would do this topic justice. In order to do that, I reached out to a good friend of mine who's been pivotal in my personal growth and understanding of this issue, and also someone who has been a really important part of my life for the last decade. He's really lived the immigrant experience and has been in sort of the vortex of policy and the downstream impacts of it for pretty much his entire life. How's that for a tease? When we get back, you're going to get to meet him, and we'll get into immigration, and we're going to be doing two episodes on this. We'll get into part one in just a moment on From the Roots Up. This episode of From the Roots Up is brought to you by The Torch Club, Sacramento's premier live music venue every Wednesday to Sunday. Check them out at 904 15th Street in Sacramento or online at torchclub.net.
Very excited today to have a longtime friend of mine, somebody who has meant so much to me in so many aspects of my life over the years. And finally, we get to sit down and talk here on From the Roots Up. I'm talking, of course, about Tomas Evangelista, who is an advocate for immigrants. He's also the founder and proprietor of Evangelista Community Relations, which is an organization that connects people and the powerful to get things done. He's also a campaign advisor, worker, consultant extraordinaire who's done just about every darn thing you can do in the political business over the years. And despite all those things about politics, about Tomas, he's just one of the nicest people I've ever had the pleasure of knowing. Thank you for joining me, Tomas.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Sean. And I'm also a fan of From the Roots Up. I have listened to several of the episodes, and it's exciting that I'm on here to tell you about my story and to talk about the larger immigration situation here in our country.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, when you and I talked about having you on the show, I thought there's about 15 topics we could cover. However, I think it's important, you know, it kind of goes back to our original relationship. How we met was related to the immigration issue. And honestly, I'll tell this story because it's one of the favorite stories I ever get to tell about you, which is I met you when I was running for Congress, and I knew you already, but I prior to running for Congress, but I really wanted you to be a member of the team that the grassroots team that helped me run this campaign. And you said, you know, Sean, that would be great, but we're going to have to sit down and I'm going to have a conversation with you about immigration first. And then I'll let you know if I'm willing to work for you. And I thought, you know, this is about the only time that anybody's ever interviewed me for a job. Like, in other words, I want to hire you, but you're interviewing me. So it just made me realize the man of character that you are. But I think it's really important for people to know your story and how you became an advocate for immigrants. You know, tell us how you got here and what your journey's been.
Yeah, thanks. And I remember that interview. You did very well. you know, I just really wanted to, I already knew you, but I didn't really know how much you knew about immigration. I don't expect people to be experts. And that's kind of why I did that. I first wanted to see if you were honest. And, you know, and there were situations where I think you said, like, you know what, I don't know much about that. And that was, for me, like, the answer that I look for. I don't expect people to know and have all the answers, but if you're able to be honest with yourself and want to learn from somebody about this topic, that's what I wanted to hear. So you passed very well. And I'm glad that I got to work on that campaign with you. But I want to share a little bit about my story, because it's pretty much how I got to the situation that I'm in. I was born in Mexico. I was, before I was born, my father ended up abandoning our family. My mother was pregnant with me. She already had my brother. We were in a small town called Morelita, Guerrero. If you ever had vacation in Acapulco, my town is about 5 hours inland. It's on the border of Michoacán and Guerrero. So that's kind of gives you a little bit of an idea of where I was born. But it's a very rural area, small town. When I was when my family grew up there, my mother, it was very poor. We didn't have running a toilet. I had to learn how to go to the bathroom, like just squatting down pretty much at that time in the early 90s. I just want to give you an idea because I think it's important to know why my mother decided to immigrate here. And it was just poverty. Right now, there's different situations. People fleeing that had fled their country that couldn't come back. And I just want to make it clear that that wasn't the case for us. It was just poverty. And my mother wanted to have an opportunity for myself and my siblings. So after my father had abandoned us.
Well, I want to stop there for a second, though, Tomas. I mean, don't say, I mean, I hear people say, oh, it's just poverty, but just is not, it's not just, right? Like, if you don't have food or running water, clean water, right? You know, that's not just like an aspiration. That's something you absolutely have to have. And if you're a parent, I don't know any parent who would look at their children and think that they might go hungry.
Right.
And just sit and allow that to happen. Nobody's going to do that, right? That's just not how we are. That's not how we're wired. So I just wanted to interject there. Like, there's no such thing as just poverty, right? You know, my mom grew up desperately impoverished, and she never made it sound like anything other than what it was, which is really heartbreaking and difficult.
Definitely. The only reason I make the difference is because I think now there's the added violence that is going on in some of these areas and people fleeing that. And I think they're in immediate danger. Well, I think we were too as well, but it's just a different element. But you're right. Thank you for saying that. I actually really appreciate it. Sometimes, you know, I was little and I wasn't the one that was making that decision, but it reminds me that my mother was and my family was in this situation that they were forced to do that.
Lost in the dream or just the silence of a moment. It's always hard to tell. Down in the way, they cut it open and they sold it. It's always hard to tell.
We all know that money spent on politicians is nothing more than a bribe. Citizens United called it free speech, but we know better. But what if we could balance the scale a few bucks at a time? That's what we're doing at the Six Pack. Taking small donations and adding them up to make things more fair. Crack open some change. Support the Six Pack. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
We don't need no truth got plenty. Now it grows on trees.
When my father abandoned us, like we were left there, my mother being the oldest, she had to make the difficult decision for her children to immigrate to this country. And when she arrived in Santa Barbara. I was at that time 1 year old, and we were left with my grandparents. And my mother, now being in this new country, had to navigate it. She had us on her mind, and that, you know, she worked to get us here because she was without her babies for a year or so. And so she worked very hard. She was able to send money so that we were able to survive in our country. And then when I was about two and a half to three, I always tell these stories because it's the years that I'm told I was very little. So the specifics are just kind of sometimes, I'm like, they say I was around two, but when I arrived here safely, thankfully to my mother, and I didn't have to go through any deserts or dangerous situations. I'm told that I was here safely, and when I arrived, you know, since then, that's all I've known, this country. I started preschool in Santa Barbara. I was the first in my family to go to preschool. But after a few years, my mother developed cancer. And she had to make the decision to seek care. Now, I don't know if it was because she couldn't find the care here or there was no cure, but she decided to go back to Mexico because that was where she was able to get healthcare. And so she left us here in the United States because once we were here, had already established that going back to to Mexico with her would have put us in a difficult situation. And then her cancer turned terminal. And so she ended up staying in Mexico and we stayed here. And that's where I came up to Auburn with my aunt and uncle who were already in this area. And my mother ended up passing away when I was six. And that was very difficult, but we knew that she had sacrificed so much for us to be here. And so we decided to stay in Auburn. My grandparents then came back into the States and I grew up here in Auburn, California. And that was the beginning of a long journey. And yeah, that's how I got here.
Decision so by you're really little and your mom left. And did you know she was sick at the time? I mean, it's hard when you're little, you don't really understand these things that much, right? I mean, You were probably told, oh, your mom's sick, and you know, but it must have been really hard. And then she went back to Mexico and just never came back because she was terminal and wow. Yeah. That alone is devastating, right? To a young child. It must have been so hard.
It was difficult for my entire family, but I've never shared this detail, but the only time that I cried was when she physically left to the United States from the United States. But when I was told that she had passed, I still remember this. I had already grieved, so I didn't cry. So that was very difficult. I was wondering like why everyone was crying if I knew she was already not here. She hadn't been with us over half a year, but so I had already experienced that. And I was just told that she was no longer here.
Man, I just can't even, it's devastating to hear that. I mean, you're fortunate that you had a family support system and that, you know, they were here to help you through those moments. But as a young child, I mean, to lose your parent at that age is devastating. And to do it, when she left and she was so far away from you. And yeah, I think that's tough, man. I appreciate you sharing that with our audience because I think it helps people understand that we're all human beings, right? Every one of us can relate to losing a loved one. If you've lost your parents, you know what that feeling is, whether you lost them when you're young or old. And so, but here you are, you have family close to you, you grieve together. As you said, you knew even then that your mom sacrificed a lot for you to be here. So here you are in Auburn, California. And at that time you're in first grade or something like that.
And you know, now that I'm older and I've gone to college and, have come back to the same community, I have gone to the school, staff, some that were still there. Were working at this school, at Alta Vista Elementary School, when I first arrived. And they actually tell me that they remembered when my brother and I arrived because, you know, they were told that that my mother wasn't here and she was sick. And then when she passed, like the staff knew. And I love this community because that they remember that difficult time in my life means so much. But also throughout my life, like, I don't think they knew my status back then. They just saw a child and they saw somebody that wanted to be a part of the community. I bring up an example of in seventh grade when I wanted to play sports. I wanted to run cross country at E.V. Kane Middle School, but I couldn't pay for the cost of the sport, filling out the form. I remember when I attempted to run cross country in sixth grade, when we got to that form, I just didn't know how to do it. My grandparents couldn't pay it. But in seventh grade, when it came time for my first race and I wasn't on that bus that was taking you to the first race, my science teacher, her name is Patricia Leffridge. Some listeners may know who she is. She's still a teacher at a school now, and she's still in the Auburn area. But she was like, no way, you're going to get on that bus to run that race. And so she walked me up to the office. I thought I was in trouble. But no, she was just there to help myself and another young boy who was also an immigrant. And she was like, these boys need to fill out this form, and we need to help pay for the fee. And the school did it. And I got on that bus and I ran my first race and I took second place. And that is what started a career that would, I call it a career, but it's mainly a sport. But at that time, I saw it as a career because as I grew into that sport, I knew that that was my chance to get to college. Later on, I understood that as I wanted to go to college, but because I was undocumented, that I couldn't go. So I learned that when I was around 15 years old. And mm-hmm. So I saw cross country as my key to go to college, because I noticed at an early age that coaches recruited kids, some of the best kids in the country. And so I thought, hey, maybe if I become really good at running, that I could get recruited, and maybe that there will be an opportunity to get into college. And it wasn't because I didn't have the grades. It was because I had the Social Security number. This was 2005, right. 2008. The California Dream Act hadn't passed yet. And we had heard of other kids in similar situations that I was in that was undocumented that attempted to go to a four-year, and the Social Security part blocked them from being able to go to school. So
it's a lot of amazing parts of that story. I mean, first of all, that teacher sort of really went to bat for you, and yes. That the school said, okay, you know what, we're going to find a way and we're just going to make this happen. So what an amazing thing to have done at that time, right. Just because she recognized something in that you needed this chance and that it might be a transformative thing for you. And it turned out it was.
From the Roots Up is community radio that is sponsored by community businesses. If you'd like to join the growing list of folks who make this show possible, reach out to Jenny, J-E-N-N-Y, at khi.com. If you love live music and want to be up close and personal with the band, there's only one place to go, the Torch Club. This hotspot is the place to be with two shows a day, Wednesday to Sunday. Check out the upcoming shows at torchclub.net, or just drop by 904 15th Street in Sacramento. The Torch Club. There's always something happening. From the Roots Up is brought to you by The Six Pack. Crack open some change and support the candidates and causes we need in these times. Paid for by The Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Been crestfallen though when you realized that the Social Security number was the thing that was going to block you no matter how fast you ran.
You know, I applied to these colleges out of high school, and I, even though I knew that I was going to get rejected, I just had to try it. That same teacher helped me fill out these applications. I did five to state schools, and they all came back with the same thing as saying, you didn't fill out the Social Security part. So I went to junior college I went to American River. They had a great cross-country team, and I moved to Sacramento. But there's another situation that occurred that I want to share that also shows how the Auburn community came together. Is when it was time to transfer to a four-year, at that time, the California Dream Act, which is a bill in the state legislature that said that kids that were that didn't have a Social Security number could get in-state financial aid. Now, mm-hmm. It didn't pay for everything because we were in the back of the line. I think the bill had something in there where it says, like, the kids that we would be in the back of the line, we would get the leftover. So it wasn't that my school would get fully paid. And I remember reading that bill, and that was my first, I think, probably time that I got that I read a bill and that I got involved or just was interested in politics, but that hadn't passed yet. So when I transferred to a four-year, the cost of school got so much higher. And even though I got into the school, I did get a quarter scholarship from Cal State Stanislaus in Turlock, but I still didn't have enough funds to even working a summer job, but I didn't have enough funds to pay for the tuition. I had a coach in high school that he pulled some money together from, I think, 10 or 12 individuals from Auburn. Some knew me, some didn't. They each put like $100, $150 a semester, and they were able to come up with about $1,200, which was what I needed to pay for my semester. They did this for four semesters in my final 2 years in order to pay for the school. So,
wow.
When you have a community that does that for you, I mean, why wouldn't you want to go back to it? So once I graduated, came back to Auburn, and it's been the motivating factor. I know that there are people out there, good people, that do this without getting any recognition, and they do it just because they just love humanity. They want people to succeed, and I think that's what we all should be doing.
The thing that astounds me is that when you start moving up a level to a wider group of people, all these connections fall apart. Where do you think that disconnect is, that from the personal to the political, to the wider issues? Like, is that something you think about? Like, I would wake up every day wondering, how do I bottle that and turn it into something bigger?
But it's a motivating factor. Just when I hear this stuff about what people say about immigrants, I remember this group of people that exists, and it's a way to bring me back to always remember that there's good people out there. And I run across them all the time in the work that I do. And I wish other immigrants know that there are people there that are there to help, don't care about your status. They just want you to succeed. And I try to tell a story to others so that people know, so immigrant families don't feel alone, don't feel like there's no one that cares about them. But the question about like how you know, there hasn't been the political will to find a solution. Well, I mean, it's misinformation, Sean. I hear it all the time wherever I go. And sometimes I'm always shocked because there's always groups of people saying, well, immigrants, you know, the government pays for everything for them. As soon as they step onto this country, I saw a political post where it says like immigrants get 3,000 something a month, the 50 minutes that they step into this country. And that post had like hundreds of thousands of likes. It was from a page that had millions of followers, and everyone in there was agreeing with that when I knew that that was a lie. Like, there is no financial assistance for anybody that's here undocumented. And it just reminds me that I think the false information spreads faster than the kindness that people show. I think for the longest time we've been used as a scapegoat for the failures of the government and the political parties. You know, when someone's struggling, they want to blame it on the immigrant that's here working three jobs, saying that they're being successful because they get things for free. And it's a distraction from, in my opinion, the inability to help communities, or to focus instead in the wealthy and giving tax breaks to other people instead of finding ways to help their community. I think that is why we're not finding a solution these days on the immigration situation.
We all know that money spent on politicians is nothing more than a bribe. Citizens United called it free speech, but we know better. But what if we could balance the scale a few bucks at a time? That's what we're doing at the Six Pack, taking small donations and adding them up to make things more fair. Crack open some change. Support the Six Pack. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. If you love live music and want to be up close and personal with the band, there's only one place to go, the Torch Club. This hotspot is the place to be with two shows a day, Wednesday to Sunday. Check out the upcoming shows at torchclub.net or just drop by 904 15th Street in Sacramento. The Torch Club. There's always something happening.
Good luck, bad luck, whatever you want to call it, the fortune of connecting with so many of the attempts over the years to try and fix this problem or to solve some portion of the problem, right? So you mentioned the California Dream Act earlier, and I guess during the Obama administration, it was DACA, right? Why don't you connect sort of the dots of like the various bumps along your path of your immigrant journey here in the United States and where that connected to changes in law and how that both maybe helped and made your life more difficult at the same time sometimes.
No, definitely. That's good. With DACA, you know, that came about in like 2012, 2013. So I was still in college. And, you know, when I was going to school, like I knew that even though I graduated with a degree, I still didn't have that social security number.
Well, let's help people too. I always say I use too many acronyms in the show. What does DACA stand for?
DACA stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. And it was an executive order by President Obama after the failed attempts of passing a DREAM Act. And I actually want to give credit to the activists that pushed the Obama administration for this, because, you know, it wasn't done easily, because there were many people that think, oh, you know, Obama did these, he helped so many immigrants, and he gets credit, of course, for making that decision. I think that that's definitely needs to be given. But there was also, like I said, activists, young undocumented immigrants that had no protection, that were protesting President Obama because there were kids, teens, people trying to go to school that were deported by President Obama. And they protested him. I think there was a group that walked across the country from San Francisco all the way to D.C. That summer. And there's a documentary called, I think, American Dreamer. There's another movie called American Dreamer, but I think if you put American Dreamer documentary, you'll find it. It tells that story. They documented it. It's really great. But they pushed Obama to issue the executive order named DACA, which provides you have to be 15 and you have to pursue a college degree or at least a degree after high school. And you have to have no criminal record. And what the exchange is, you come out of the shadows, tell the government who you are, and what you get is just a deferred deportation. So it's called deferred action because our deportation is deferred. We're still deportable. We can still get deported, but we're like the last on the priority level. And during that time, you also do receive a work permit with a social security number to be able to live and work in the United States. And you have to renew it every 2 years. And that was, for me, the moment where I thought that, like, wow, this is a big opportunity. No one in my family, or at least the ones that are immigrants, had a social security number. So it was a big opportunity for us. It was a big door that had opened. And after I graduated college with my degree in kinesiology, I knew that I can get a good job and start my life.
Wow. I mean, there's so much to unpack there. And I remember when this passed, I didn't know you then. You were actually probably the first DACA recipient that I knew had gotten a DACA, right? Like, because I mean, I'm sure a lot of people I knew maybe had gone through that experience, but it's not something that they would just openly talk about for a lot of obvious reasons at that time. But you were the first person I met who had actually gone through it. But I remember, you know, thinking, well, I don't know anybody, but the moral clarity of it was so obvious to me, right? Like, somebody who's brought here has never meaningfully lived in another country, has grown up here. Along, they're American. In my mind, like, I was like, yeah, well, I think it should go further than that. Like, if you have been here your whole life and you are gone through high school, of course you're American. Like, that way, if you know what I mean, I bet you, yeah. Like, I don't think, you know, I just thought, like, of course. And my mind was like, I thought, and you clarified this for me, like, no, I thought you had citizenship, but no, you didn't get citizenship. You just got the right to be deported, less deportable, which
pretty much
meant that you still lived like in a real razor thin situation, right? Like, you got to do everything right and hope that nothing goes wrong. And that, you know what I mean? Like, the pressure of that.
Well, it was a risk. I mean, early on, some people said, oh, this is a trap. You know, this is an executive order. It can be removed by any president. Then you're just known to the government and easier to find. So I waited a year, Sean. I don't think I've shared that, but I was like, okay, you guys go try this first.
Well, yeah, I don't blame you, man. That's totally legit. I would feel the same way. I'd be like, let's see what happens. Let's let some people go out there. I want to see if they're all right. And then, yeah, of course.
So after a year, I trusted it and I applied and I was granted it, and I applied on my own. So, well, I went to, and you know, it's always advisable to go to an attorney for these things. I went to an attorney, and he said it was $1,500 to, on top of the 500 something fee to do this. And you know, I was still in college, and an extra $2,000. And I didn't, you know, I don't always ask for money, so I didn't do that. And so I asked that attorney, I said, hey, if I've never been in trouble by the law, I'm in college right now. Could I apply this on my own? Is there risk? And yeah, there's always risk, but yeah, you could do that. So I just filled the questions out and I turned it in the evidence that was needed. I had to go back and provide some form of document that showed that I was here almost every month since I arrived in this country. So I had to go back to all my elementary schools, make sure I got, like, you know, whatever certificate that they got that I was in school. I actually, now that I remember this, I got a request for more evidence because there was a summer, I don't know, I think it was like second or third grade, where it was summer vacation and I didn't have the documents to show that I was here. So they requested for more. So I had to go searching for some type of record that I could show that I was here the summer.
But you hadn't left.
So it was scary, but I did it on my own.
As if when you're a kid, you're just going to pick up and go road tripping out of your country. You know, yeah, I mean, come on. Like, that's,
there's that piece. You have to show when you applied for DACA that you've been here continuously since you entered. And I mean, it was a stack of documents I sent, and it was,
it's been nerve wracking, man.
It was, but I was proud of myself that I was able to do that. And that was part of the education that I received here.
This episode of From the Roots Up is brought to you by The Torch Club, Sacramento's premier live music venue every Wednesday to Sunday. Check them out at 904 15th Street in Sacramento or online at torchclub.net.
We get something we both know and we don't talk too much about it.
Was this the moment where you decided, hey, maybe I should be the person helping people do this? Right? Or do other things? Like, is this where the moment you're like started connecting the dots? Like, hey, there needs to be people out there who help people do this, because most of us don't have the money or the wherewithal to do these things, right? Like,
I don't think I had thought about it then, but I think that's what the ball started rolling, where I was like, hey, I can do this on my own. I can help others. But it was definitely the example that the community and my family set, that it's best to help others. And when someone needs help, it needs to be given.
So you clear that, so you somehow find that stack of paper, get it all together. You get your DACA status, I guess. Is that what it is? Yeah. And so now you have DACA status. Somebody comes up with the term dreamer. So now you're a dreamer. I like that term. I mean, it seemed like a very positive dream. We all want to be dreamers.
The dreamer term actually came before DACA.
Okay, so that was the dreamer was what led to DACA, right? Like, yes. The people who were like, I'm dreaming of this, and then.
Well, okay, I can get more specific. It started from a 2001 bill called the DREAM Act, the first one that was introduced. And DREAM stood for, now I'm forgetting what it is, but there is an acronym to the word DREAM, and I can't remember it now.
That's okay.
It was coined by a reporter, and then from that bill, Dreamer then was used in 2001 to refer to children that were brought here at no fault of their own and were undocumented.
Wow. What a journey. And for what, when you were brought here as a little kid, you didn't know this was the journey you were going to be on?
I just remembered the acronym.
What is it?
Developmental Relief and Education for Alien Minors.
They've been pretty hard to get Dream in there, but I'm going to give it to them. Like, that's all right, though. I mean, whatever, right? It got you.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, got you there. So now you graduate from college and you've got your DACA status and you're out trying to make your way in the world. At what point did you decide that it wasn't enough just to have the status, but that you felt like maybe it was in time to get involved with other people and help other people get it and sort of move that, the part of the journey that gets us closer to when you and I met?
When I graduated, I had a degree in kinesiology. My goal was to become a physical therapist. I worked at the Auburn Racquet Club for a year after college, but then I applied for this position for a nonprofit called the Latino Leadership Council. It was a promotor position, and pretty much you were like a community resource to other families. But I got the job, and I started working with Latino families in Placer County in the surrounding area. And every family that I worked with reminded me of my own. So I was motivated more to help. And I just realized that I love doing it. I wanted to make a difference. It reminded me of those people that helped me briefly. Like, if I can help somebody along their journey, and I could potentially change their life, and they don't have to know who I am. Like, it's just that effect. And so I don't want to call it addicted, but like, I was drawn to that work. And I worked for Latino Leadership Council for 5 years. I think when I met you, it was on my third year. And that is what, got me going. And of course, in 2016, a president was elected that was saying that there
was so long ago. I don't remember who that was. That guy's long gone, right? Yeah,
right.
Okay, good.
And I started seeing posts on social media from my friends and my friends' parents that were talking about undocumented immigrants, this undocumented immigrants, that, and they were being drawn to that. And before the election, I didn't speak out. I was like, it's too risky. And I regret that. I regret not saying anything. I know that the election, you know, went to that way. But I realized after that election that I needed to speak out. I have a sliver of protection, way more than anybody else has. And December 28th, 2016, an article was posted by the Auburn Journal. And it was my story and also my co-founder Doris Romero's story, immigration story. And we were coming out to our community that we were undocumented. We had DACA, but are still undocumented. And this is our story. And since then, like, you can't erase that from the internet. It's there now for everyone to see. I got many text messages from friends that told me that they didn't know. They were like telling me how proud they were for me to share my story. And that is where I started. And I think 3 or 4 months after that, I met you.
Yeah, it wasn't even that long. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think first time I remember seeing you speak was had to have been in January, because you came, you were the featured speaker. You and Doris were the featured speakers at the El Dorado Progressives February meeting, which is to this day the largest meeting that group ever had. More than 400 people showed up.
From the Roots Up is community radio that is sponsored by community businesses. If you'd like to join the growing list of folks who make this show possible, reach out to Jenny, J-E-N-N-Y, at khi.com. We all know that money spent on politicians is nothing more than a bribe. Citizens United called it free speech, but we know better. But what if we could balance the scale a few bucks at a time? That's what we're doing at the Six Pack, taking small donations and adding them up to make things more fair. Crack open some change. Support the Six Pack. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
She was born in November 1963, the day Aldous Huxley died.
I always had this idea back then that I was more protected being public than being silent and not known, because there are many families now in current time that are picked up by ICE, but many people don't know them because they're not as connected or as public as I am. And so I always thought, if I built a community, if I'm ever taken, then that community, I hope, would speak up for me and show up and make a little bit of noise so that I won't be, so I'll be released. But of course, I'm not doing anything bad. I'm just using my First Amendment right for free speech. And all I do is share my story.
And, you know, last time I checked, those rights extend to anybody in our borders. You don't have to be a citizen to get our rights. That's one of the things that made us exceptional from day one as a country. We extended the rights to everybody who were here because we believed so firmly that those rights were so important that they should belong to everybody within standing on the ground that is the United States of America. And so, I mean, imagine when they were written, like the notion of citizenship was very different when our founders were writing the Constitution and the amendments. So, the Bill of Rights.
They're very clear in using persons over citizens. And there are parts in the Constitution where it does say citizens, like when it comes to voting, clearly says citizen of the United States. But when it came to these rights, it says person. And the Supreme Court throughout this country's birth like has held that up, that it's persons, not citizens. So
yeah, so an important thing for people to understand when they think that, oh, you don't have those rights because you weren't born here. That's not actually how it works. And right. It does work that way in other countries. And for somebody who traveled a little bit, I'll say that is always something that's in the back of your mind. Like, oh, if I'm accused of something in this other country and they don't have those rights, I could end up in prison and have no way to get out. Even if I did nothing wrong, no way to defend myself. And so I've always thought that, you know, of the few things that they really got right, our founders, like, despite the fact that they're a bunch of rich white slave owners, they nailed it on that one. They really did do that.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And it's something that we have to defend every day. So, you know, throughout this journey, in addition to DACA, there's been the ongoing saga of will or will not the United States Congress manage to pass real immigration reform. It's happened a few times in my lifetime for various reasons, usually economic, usually not having to do so much with immigrants, but having to do with people here and their reliance upon immigrants for various things, particularly work, need of workers, right? But even in your time here, there's been a couple of attempts to pass it, and yet it's always seemed to come up short. What's your opinion been on the legislation that we've seen in your lifetime that you're aware of?
I can think of like the most recent attempts in 2018, 2019, when this crisis with DACA happened after the president was trying to rescind it and, you know, put a lot of people in danger, and was used as like a bargaining tool. But I got the opportunity to speak to multiple congressmen, senators as well. And I was in D.C. when some of this stuff was at the height where it could have been passed. And from what I understood at that moment, for this specific reason, the parties didn't trust that the other one was going to stick to what the agreement was, you know, which I think at that time was for, I think, stricter immigration policy in order to give an opportunity for at least DACA recipients to become citizens. But also, like, I think at the time also they were trying to throw our parents under the bus. Mm-hmm. And so there was that piece too that was added where, hey, these kids are great, but their parents, like, you know, they made this choice and they're adults and, you know, they can't do that. So there was also a group of us that were like, no way. Like, what? I would never throw my parent under the bus. And
yeah, what?
And yeah, so there was that as well. And I think, but I think there's just a lack of understanding of how connected we all are. Like, it's not just that, like, we're coming here and we need the United States. There's that, because this country does provide, as many people may not believe this anymore, but it still provides opportunity, still provides a chance for somebody to make themselves out of nothing. But they also need us as well. And you touched on it with work, you know, and jobs and things, these things. There's a need, it's a mutual need. And I think that the part about needing the workers and the for other things, I think it's kind of like a dirty secret. So people, I mean, don't mention it. I know that in this community, there's restaurants and there's these restaurant owners that, whether they know it or not, like, they're employing undocumented workers. I don't want to out anybody, but either they do know and they pretend they don't, or they don't know, but there's a mutual need. I always tell people, I mean, it's impossible for me to stay unemployed for so long. Obviously, like, I have a degree and I want to be employed and get paid well. But if I've gone through months in between campaigns, I've gone and worked at a restaurant washing dishes. I've done that myself even after a degree. I enjoy it. It's actually very fun. Like, you're sitting there just, you know, with the workers in the back, and it's actually probably the least stressful jobs. You have to be quick, and it is kind of taxing, but
I've washed some dishes, man. I know.
I just say that.
Explain to me, man. I've spent my time back there.
There's no way that, I mean, obviously, given if there's a disability, there's you can't physically do that work. I get that, but there is like there's I would never go unemployed for more than a few months.
I'll be honest with you, restaurants I worked in, I did not want to work in the front of the house. I liked being in the back and
But there's a mutual need, and I think we need to come to that. Like, that's being ignored right now. Like, it's all like, oh, they're here to take to get things for free. They're here just, I mean, it's either like we don't work, or we're the hardest workers, or we're dangerous, you know.
Right. There's always some excuse that doesn't actually track with reality, right? Like, you're either the guy who stole everybody's job and also collects benefits.
Oh, yeah.
And also is on the side, like dealing drugs and committing violent crime. You're like, who is this person? Like, I've never met that. Wow. Like, that is the most industrious person ever. They must never sleep too. Like, what?
It doesn't make sense. And
yeah,
I think
it doesn't add up, right? If you just put like a little bit into it in your mind, you're like, that doesn't make any sense. That's not a real person.
If you love live music and want to be up close and personal with the band, there's only one place to go, the Torch Club. This hotspot is the place to be with two shows a day, Wednesday to Sunday. Check out the upcoming shows at torchclub.net or just drop by 904 15th Street in Sacramento. The Torch Club. There's always something happening. Before we wrap up, I want to really take a moment to break down what we can do on this topic. One of the things that Tomas always stresses to me is that a big part of what we can do is just being a good neighbor. That approach, by the way, is universally good, right? There's never a bad time to do that, really. And, you know, it's always good to know who your neighbors are, for them to know who you are, for you to have a relationship, and to build community. And I just have to say, it was truly amazing for me to hear and connect with Tomas's story. I've known him for about a decade, and I've never heard a lot of that. So I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. It's a lot easier to understand these complex issues when we see them through the eyes of people who have lived them. We'll be back on our next episode with Tomas to complete this conversation and learn even more about immigration from the roots up. I'm Sean Frame, and I hope you'll engage me in a conversation. If you want to reach out to us, send an email to fromtherootsupshow@gmail.com. They try to redefine everything that I know and love. God, I know your mind. Will be